AEW has been on a streak of late of very good shows. Dynamite and Collision. This past weekend, we had Collision Grand Slam. They were in Australia, which I enjoyed. Thought that was the better wrestling show of the weekend. We got two great wrestling shows this weekend. So the question is, could they carry that momentum over into tonight's episode of Dynamite in Phoenix? And I was left with a question. Actually, I was left with a question even coming into this show tonight. But I was left with a question coming out of it as well. You know, we saw Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay on Saturday. Great match. Get a win over Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita. When that match was over, Kenny Omega backstage challenged Takeshita to a match at Revolution for the International Championship. And he brought up the fact that, you know, Takeshita has beaten him twice before. Can you do it again? As if Omega was daring him to do it again, right? That was the challenge that he laid down at this man's feet. And then they announced that there would be a match on Dynamite tonight between Orange Cassidy, who has not wrestled in 6 weeks, and Roderick Strong, with the winner going on to challenge Takeshita for the international title on Dynamite next week. And the winner of that match would then go on to defend the championship at Revolution against Kenny Omega. Why wouldn't you have a setup for this where Kenny Omega would be part of this little international title series and he would have to fight in order to earn his way into a championship match at the pay-per-view with Takeshita? Instead, we have a match which was rendered effectively obsolete tonight, with Takeshita defending his title next week to see who gets to challenge Kenny Omega at Revolution. I mean, there's some backwards logic there, if I've ever seen it. None of this really makes any sense, because the whole essence of the challenge that Omega laid down had to do with, you beat me twice, I dare you to do it again. And AEW put themselves in a position here where, conceivably, we could end up with a completely different match on the Revolution card. So this was very bizarre. Just the way they set this whole thing up to begin with, very bizarre. We also had a street fight tonight, which I enjoyed, that ended with last man standing rules, which was kind of strange. And we had a post-match angle after the women's match, which I also enjoyed, between Chris Statlander and Megan Bain. I didn't have any issue with the match, but what followed in the post-match, honestly, is one of the most embarrassing things I've seen on any wrestling show all year so far. I don't know what the fuck happened with that post-match angle, with Thunder Rosa coming out with a chair. I don't know what went wrong. I don't know where the malfunction was. I don't know where the miscommunication was. That was embarrassing, is what that was. This was a show that was far from perfect and not as good as their recent shows. They peaked in the opening segment. We had a face-off with MJF and Hangman Adam Page that I'm going to be getting into. That right there, that was the peak of the show tonight. Everything that followed that was very hit or miss. There were things I liked, there were things I didn't. First hour of this show was definitely the more superior of the two, but this show was a lot more hit or miss than some of their other recent efforts have been. We're going to get into it all, though, because this is your AEW Dynamite review. It is February 19th, 2025. I am the Sala Monster. Thank you so much for joining me here on a Wednesday night, as we do each and every week. Like and subscribe. You guys know the drill. Super chats are open. You will see them when and if they come in popping up on your screen. And if so, we will hang out a little bit later on and go through your messages. And if you guys got questions about tonight's show, what did you think? Do you think the streak is over? Or do you think the streak continues? Did the streak die tonight? Like it did at the Superdome back at WrestleMania 30. Is the streak over? Chime in and let me know your thoughts. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Let's take it from the top here, because we had Excalibur on commentary tonight, along with Taz and Ian Riccaboni, who was sitting in for Tony Schiavone. I don't know why, because Tony was there. I thought he just wasn't at the show. And then he popped up at the they were in the Overrun. And not only do we have Tony Schiavone on the show, but they trotted out Jim Ross for the main event. And I would say that Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong, hardly a reason to trot out good old JR to do commentary on a random Dynamite for a main event. But Tony Schiavone was there, so I have no problem with them subbing Ian Riccaboni in for him because I think Ian Riccaboni is great. So they handled commentary for the night. MJF was out to the ring first for his face-to-face with Hangman Adam Page, and both men were told, we were told coming into the show tonight, no physicality whatsoever. No physicality. I don't know if they said the match would be off if there was, but there would be consequences if they got physical with each other. So basically we had that rule established because otherwise what's stopping them from tearing into each other? So then the Cowboy was out to the ring next, and both men were in the ring. So MJF spoke first, and he brought us back to AEW's very first year in 2019, right? The birth of this company. And the first ever casino battle royal, where the winner would have the right to go on to become the first ever AEW World Heavyweight Champion. He says, I had that match won. And Hangman screwed him. He cheap shotted him like a gutless little worm. So he had to scratch and claw his way to the top. And along the way, he says he beat some of the biggest names in all of AEW. And he mentioned a few names. He threw a few names out there at us. But looking down at his Dynamite Diamond ring, he was struggling to remember, who did I beat for this? And he said, ah, yes, I remember who it was. It was Hangman. And he went on to become a 6-time Dynamite Diamond Ring champion. He main evented Wembley Stadium, the greatest and longest reigning AEW World Heavyweight Champion of all time. And do you know why, is what he asked Hangman here. Because his name is Maxwell Jacob Friedman, and then he did his usual catchphrase. So then it was Hangman's turn. And Hangman wanted to know why he was talking to him like, I don't know who you are. I know exactly who you are. I know exactly who you are. I know exactly what you stand for. Because you're 28 years old and already a history-making career, but when you listed all of your accomplishments, you sounded very angry about it. Says, you still can't be happy. You're still an angry person. Is it because there's something that you still have not been able to win from them, right? He points at the fans. So that angered MJF. He touched a nerve with that. MJF snapped at him and told him to shut his mouth. And he said he doesn't give a damn about them. He just thinks it's funny that these hypocrites get to decide who's morally redeemable and who's not. Says Hangman's had everything handed to him. Why? Why? Because the fans woke up and decided that he got to be the main character? A man who drank someone else's blood? A man who drove a syringe through a human being's face? The guy who burned a man's house down to ash? But he's the good guy, right? And everybody cheered. Because the fans are really the heels. I've been saying this for the longest time. We are the heels. I am the heel. You are the heel. So they cheered every time he mentioned something horrendous that Hangman did in his career. The syringe, burning the guy's house down, everything. They all cheered. So he says, these morons will chant cowboy shit at the top of their lungs, which of course, cue the chants. Everybody loves Hangman Adam Page, but he has a question for him. After everything that you've done, do you love you? Did you love yourself after you ended the career of your mentor? After you demolish that worthless, talentless jobber hack, Christopher Daniels. Hangman snapped at him at that point and told him Daniels is 10 times the man that MJF will ever be. And if he could rip out his own spine and give it to him, he would do it in a heartbeat. And if there's a wrestling company in our lifetimes, he gave a part of his life to it. And he went out fighting for his life. Says he died a warrior's death. Like he's in the fucking coffin and they're wheeling it into the morgue. He died a warrior's death, he said. And he knows that he would not have had it any other way. He says he took care of pro wrestling even when pro wrestling did not take care of him. He is the best of us, all of us. And it's men and women like him that we have the chance to stand in this ring tonight. Don't ever forget it. That's why we are here. And it's that selflessness and that humility that I don't think you understand. You don't have the stomach for it. Says, let me ask you, if your career ended tonight, this is him addressing MJF now, said that if your career ended tonight, what would they say about you? Would they say that you're a credit to this sport? Or would they say you're an opportunist, a selfish coward who has taken every shortcut that he could try to take to win their admiration? Again, pointing to the fans. You ask why, after everything I've done, these people still seem to care about me. And I'm not going to be arrogant enough to say that I understand it, but he knows what is right and what is wrong, and he tells the truth about it. In 5 years, he has probably lied 100 times, but never once to them. This is everything that he has had, he has worked for it. The tag team titles, the World Heavyweight Championship, his family, he's worked for it, and it was not easy. And you have spent 5 years cheating and scheming your way to the top, and you would tell people that you were better than them. And I hope that for once, for your sake, there's a small part of you that is actually wondering, is that true? Because it's not. And deep down, I think you know it. So MJF was not done. He laughed. And he asked him, are you a child? He says, did he not win fair and square on his way to the top? Right? He goes, I didn't win fair and square on my way to the top. Who cares? He goes, the history books don't give a damn how you get the job done. He said, before the doors of this company even opened, the powers that be decided that they were going to prop you up. Says Hangman came in with all the buzz and propaganda in the world. All he needed was a scarf and a mic. Hangman has earned nothing. He said he walks and talks and dresses better than him. He asked Hangman to name one thing that you do better than me. And Hangman said, I am real. And he dropped the mic. So the two of them went nose to nose, and very strategically they had the Revolution logo right in the aisleway, in the background, behind them, in between them as they went nose to nose, showing that March 9th date for the pay-per-view. MJF said, you know what? You could be the main character all you want. He's got no problem being the bad guy. And then he dropped the mic. So they decided to square up. They each took their jackets off, and it looked like they were getting ready to throw down. Security was out there surrounding the ring, so they jumped up on the apron. But MJF threw his hands up and he's like, all right, right? Like he's going to stand down. But then he turned around and he spat right in Hangman's face. Hangman stood there for a little bit. Then he darted at him. MJF bolted out of the ring. The security guards held Hangman back until he started dropping them all one by one. I love how the announcers, by the way, they explained that it's kind of okay because the rules were that these two men couldn't touch each other, right? That was the rule. Nobody said anything that Hangman couldn't beat up security guards. I guess that's okay. So he starts mowing them down, you know, one by one until Christopher Daniels is behind him. And he didn't know it, and he almost struck him. But he held up when he saw that it was Daniels. Daniels said, this is what I was fighting for the whole time. You know who you are. I know who you are. Don't listen to him. Does understand? And Hangman nodded at him, and he left the ring. I thought that this was an excellent segment. Hangman is not the promo that MJF, he's not bad promo, but he's not the promo that MJF is, but I thought he held his own well enough here. I love how they tied it back to the start of the company in 2019, because they did. They had one match, which is hard to believe that in the 5+ years of this company, these two guys, right, have been there since day one, AEW originals, have never had a proper feud. They've never had a pay-per-view match. They've never done anything beyond that one match back in 2019. And I love how they tied it back into that, because that was really the kickoff of all the Dynamite Diamond Ring nonsense. But it really brings it back and shows you that there is, even though they've not really worked much together, there is actually a history there between them. So I like that. But also, like, you've got two very distinctly different characters here. There are characters on a wrestling show that may have similarities, you know, whether they're bad guys who cheat a lot, or they're very egotistical, or they dress not, whatever. Some people have similarities, even if they're not identical. These two are two polar opposite characters, right? I mean, the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they act. One is treated as a babyface now, the other is treated as a heel. So there's a lot of differences between these two guys. And you had Hangman here in this promo explaining that everything that, you know, MJF has done in his view is just to gain the approval of the fans, which, I mean, he already did. I mean, he had his babyface run. So it's not as if the fans haven't embraced him at times over the years, right? He's our scumbag. And he did have that you know, what ended up being a babyface run there for a while when he was champion. But I guess the idea is that MJF is someone who is very insecure. Like when he snapped at him in this promo, right? There was that moment where MJF snapped at him. He's got these insecurities about him that he tries to hide. He'll laugh it off, or he'll snap and insult and go for the low-hanging fruit. But he pointed out, like, you know, you're doing it really to gain validation from them. So that's the point that he was trying to get over here in this promo. And I guess, you know, it's kind of a way for him to cover for his insecurities. Not so subtle there with the graphic in the background. And Tony Khan did make it official later on during the show that on March 9th at Revolution, we are going to get the match. It is going to be Hangman Adam Page one-on-one with MJF, which is great. That match is official. I said this before. I said it weeks ago that this is going to be one of, if not the most important program on AEW television all year. Because this, I think, is exactly what this show and what this company needs right now. Like, the time for it is right. This is what we need right now. We don't need Hangman and you know, Christopher Daniels. Obviously, that was like a little side story to feed into what this larger story is. MJF and Jeff Jarrett, it'll happen. It's on the back burner. That's exactly where it belongs. This right here is the feud that we need right now. And Revolution, I think, is only chapter one. I mean, I think it would be insane for it to be kind of a one-and-done thing. I don't think anybody really honestly expects this to be one-and-done. Revolution is chapter one. You know, we have a ways to go until we get to Texas at All In. And there's only one man right now who I think should be the AEW World Heavyweight Champion coming out of that show. And it's one of the two people in this feud. But we have a ways to go. We still have months until we get there. So right now, you know, one way that you kill time and one way that you build to that taking place, we have the first match at Revolution. And honestly, that's a match that MJF ought to win. And I think that's how I would see it playing out. But you got all this time. You have MJF, you know, he could win that first match at Revolution. You get a second match out of it. And then maybe you do a third match in the Owen Hart tournament. They always do the Owen Hart tournament in the lead up the last couple of years to All In. All In this year is a month earlier. So my guess is we'll get the Owen in June at some point. I don't know how that's going to affect. Well, actually, they moved, I guess, Forbidden Door to the end of August, so they probably effectively swapped them, right? Forbidden Door, I think, is going to be towards the end of August, so they'll probably do the Owen in June. Again, plenty of time. Maybe we get a third match in the finals of the Owen Hart tournament. It comes down to MJF and Hangman Page, and they come into that tournament one win apiece. The winner of that match punches their ticket to the main event in Texas at All In to challenge for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. That's how Hangman gets into that main event. You know, the story sells itself. This is a story that you can play out for the next few months, and it could feed right into your biggest show of the year. So that's what I'm hoping for, you know, because there's a clear path if they want to take it. So that's what I'm hoping they do. But I thought this was a great segment. And this, honestly, this right here, this was the peak. This was the high point of the show. Everything else was below this. So if you saw this segment, this is pretty much as good as it got as far as the entire show is concerned. Now, they aired a highlights package from Grand Slam Australia this past weekend, and then they cut back to the announcers who, I guess they were at a desk that was elevated, either on a platform. It looked like they were in the crowd, and they were standing, and they had their backs turned to the crowd. It was a great shot because they had about 3,000 people, I think, is what the attendance was tonight. It was one of these smaller venues, which I thought looked great, but it looked packed. So, like, behind them, you just see the sea of fans, you know, behind them. So it was just like a little production change. They don't normally do that here on this show. So I liked that. I thought that was a good look. It just made it look very filled in. And we had Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata, who, of course, now, if you recall from last week, are calling themselves the Ops. So we have the Ops taking on the Patriarchy, Christian Cage, Nick Wayne, and Kip Sabian. After a commercial break, the Patriarchy was in control. Shibata mounted a comeback. He sent Sabian outside, laid out Nick Wayne. Hook made the hot tag, so we got suplexes galore, including to Christian, who got sent to the floor. Joe steps in, he cleans house, And Christian almost snuck in for a kill switch, but Joe threw him outside, and Samoa Joe went flying out of the ring. I mean, we see him do these tope suicidas, but this was maybe the wildest one I've seen him do. And he just flies out of the ring like a missile and wipes out not only Christian, but himself, because he took a hard fall on the floor out there. Wayne tried to steal a pin using the ropes, which, of course, Rick Knox didn't see because he's legally blind. Hook, though, kicked out anyway. Wayne tried Wayne's World, but when he went backwards off the ropes, he jumped right into Red Rum. Shibata sank in a choke outside on Sabian. Joe was holding off Christian, who refused to come in to help his boys, and Wayne tapped out. So Christian basically fed his sons to the lions here in this match. I'm not sure what the end game is here with the ops and the patriarchy. You know, when we have Christian still running around with that contract for a world championship match, his former best friend is in the main event challenging for that title in a few weeks. So I have to imagine that there's going to be at least a tease of a cash-in, if not an actual cash-in attempt at Revolution. But that really is the story with Christian, where this is headed, or this didn't necessarily feel like the end here, but I don't know. One thing I will say, though, Joe is still that guy. Whenever Samoa Joe is on Dynamite, I enjoy the segment. I enjoy what we get from Joe. Joe's been gone a lot recently. He's been doing a lot of filming for Twisted Metal. You know, they wrapped that up, I guess, a few months ago. But I don't know. I don't know. You never know, right? You never know. How many more years are we going to have Joe in the ring doing topes out of the ring? Okay. I'm trying to appreciate Samoa Joe while he is still active and relatively full time. So I thought this was fine, but where this is going as far as this program with these two groups, I don't know. So we come back from commercial break and we get highlights from the Ring of Honor Global War Show. They did fly people down to Australia this weekend who were not on Collision, but they did film this Global Wars special. And Bandido pinned Chris Jericho on that show in a six-man tag. It was Bandido and the Outrunners against the Learning Tree crew. So now we're back live, and in the back, Renee is interviewing the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Chris Jericho. And she asks Jericho if he accomplished what he set out to do at Global Wars when he lost to Bandido. So Jericho told her to wipe that smirk off your face. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't even have a job. None of these people would. These people have a job because of me, he says. Yet I get treated with disrespect and vitriol. Goes, why is that? Goes, I'm a 9-time world champion across various promotions in various countries. People stop me on the street as they did in Australia to ask me for a picture. Bandido is the person who they asked to hold the camera to take the picture. Jericho, not happy about being pinned by Bandido, obviously, at that special. So he goes, congratulations. You got what you wanted. And he said that this Saturday at Collision, he is going to give Bandido a shot at the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. Forget the bounty. And he had the bounty paper, the poster. He ripped it up. He says, I'm going to do this myself. He's going to show him that people are getting a little too comfortable around Chris Jericho. But he didn't just say Chris Jericho. They actually bleeped it. So I guess live in the arena, he must have cursed, because basically he said, you know, Chris Jericho. So that's what we heard on TV. But Jericho was very angry here in this segment. He was not very happy. So anyway, that match is coming up on Collision this weekend. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. If you've been looking for a way to eat healthier, but maybe you don't know where to start, or you work yourself to death during the day so much so that by the time you get home, you just don't have time to make yourself something. Or maybe, frankly, you're just not a very good cook. I feel like I check a lot of these boxes. Look no further. Factor is the meal delivery service that you've been waiting for. Factor offers chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well a hell of a lot easier. They're dietitian approved and ready to heat and eat in just 2 minutes, so you can get the sustenance that you need and actually enjoy it, no matter what life may throw at you. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any lifestyle, no matter how hectic. You can lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. Based on a randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, results will vary, of course, depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's super easy to pick meals that are tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients that you can trust and convenience that can't be beat. Just last week, I had the chance to try their Thai-roasted vegetable green curry meal with coconut lime rice, and it tasted great. I didn't know what to expect because it's not anything that I've tried before, but it was very filling, too. I wasn't still hungry when I was done, and it was easy to make. I just popped it into the microwave a couple of different times. The whole thing from start to finish after I let it cool was 5 minutes, and dinner was served. For me, it's not a matter of losing weight or trying to add specific macronutrients to my diet or anything like that. It might be for you, but for me, it's just about trying to find some new meal options that look really interesting, but I could heat and eat in a matter of minutes. It's the convenience of it. And this did the trick for me. And I'll tell you something, there's a sweet ginger tofu with jasmine rice just waiting for me in the fridge for lunch tomorrow that I'm very much looking forward to trying. And you have no excuse not to give it a shot yourself, because Factor is offering a special discount for Sound Off listeners. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use the code solomonster50off to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code solomonster50off at factormeals.com/solomonster50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Up next, we had a street fight. Anything goes. Powerhouse Hobbs taking on Big Bill. And they brawled right as Bill got to the ring, and things immediately spilled into the crowd. They had a brawl through the stands. They brawled back to ringside. And Hobbs tossed Bill into the barricade at ringside. Bill caught Hobbs in the knee with an audio mixer. I don't know where he got that from, but he hit him in the knee with it, the knee that had the knee brace on, so the injured knee, previously injured knee. Bill grabbed a wrench from under the ring. Hobbs was able to avoid those strikes with it, though. Hobbs knocked the wrench out of his hand with a chair and then smashed it across his back a few times. Bill was able to recover the wrench, and he hit Hobbs in the head with it. He collapsed on the floor. So he was taunting the crowd, and while he did that, Hobbs came up bleeding from the head, and Bill delivered a uranage on the flat part of the ring steps. That took us into the commercial break. Later on, the action spilled outside onto the stage, and Hobbs hit Bill with a duffel bag full of bricks, as Bill did to Hobbs a month ago on Collision. So, as they say, turnabout is fair play. Hit him with a backpack full of bricks back on that show. Bill and Brian Keith, they had placed the steps on stage during the commercial break, and Hobbs slammed Bill onto the steps. And then he climbed up onto the steps, and he shoved Bill backwards. Now, it looked like he was trying for a choke slam at first, and then it was almost like he gave up and said, fuck it, and he just shoved him. And so Bill, and again, I say off the stage, what are we talking about, 3 feet, right? If that, it's not like a steep drop. But it's a drop. So he shoves him backwards off the stage and down through a table at ringside that had barbed wire on top of it. Now, there were actually two tables there, and he overshot the first one. Well, that table also had barbed wire on it. So he overshot the first table, and he went crashing through the second table. And Bill was unable to free himself from the barbed wire. I think Aubrey Edwards was the referee. She's right there, and she's counting. Right? So it's not like there's no count outs in this match, but she's counting him as if it's a last man standing match. And Bill is like, he's stuck in the barbed wire. So he's conscious. He's not knocked out. He's trying to pull himself out of the barbed wire and he can't do it. And eventually, you know, the referee counts to 10 and calls for the bell. So this street fight somehow ended up turning into a last man standing match, which is funny to me because when Justin Roberts made the initial announcement in the ring introductions, he specifically said that the only way to win this match is by knockout, by pinfall, or by submission. None of which actually occurred here in this match. So I would say that if Big Bill has a problem here, he could definitely protest the outcome of this match. Because it don't make no sense how this match ended that way. Whether you think that that should have been one of the stipulations or not, that's not what Justin Roberts said at the beginning of this match, but that's how the match ended. Look, it was fine. You know, your typical garbage brawl. You have your plunder and your fucking barbed wire and shit. I'm so desensitized to it. When you have a random match on TV like this, it doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't in the grand scheme. So it was fine for what it was supposed to be. When Hobbs got hit with the bricks, if I recall, though, it was an injury angle, right? I don't think he was back on TV the very next week. I could be wrong, but it was weird, though, knowing that. And then here with Bill, you know, getting the same treatment and, you know, the match just went on. So that was a little strange. But we got a hardcore blow-off, what I assume is a blow-off, this better be, to this feud, you know, here between these two big guys. And honestly, this was a win that Hobbs needed more than Bill. They've done well with Hobbs since the shit that went down with Moxley. And really, I mean, it's not terribly high praise. All you need to do is make sure that you have a spot for him on the show doing something every single week. You've got to get him on television every single week. They've done that. So far, with Hobbs. With Bill, he didn't have to win because his story is that he keeps letting Jericho down. He's disappointing the learning tree. We all know where this is headed. This is headed to Splitsville between the two of them. So him losing actually feeds into the story that he has going on right now. So it wouldn't have really made a whole lot of sense for him to beat Hobbs here anyway. So as far as the finish goes, even though the way they did the finish was very bizarre, it was, I think, the correct finish of the match. So in the back, we had the Murder Machines, Lance Archer and Brian Cage. They are with Renee in the back, and she asks about the Hurt Syndicate, who was not there on this show tonight. Cage says they have something that they want to say face-to-face to Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley, but surprise, surprise, they're nowhere to be found. And Lance Archer said, but they will be. They hear the Hurt Syndicate will be on Collision. So if they want to put on their big boy pants, let's talk about those tag team titles because we're taking them. And everybody dies. We all know how this is going to end. But you got to build some people up to feed to the Hurt Syndicate. So why not the two guys who are paid, I'm sure, very handsomely to lose pretty much in almost all of their matches. So we'll get some kind of a confrontation or an interview, promo, or some such thing, I guess, with them on Collision this weekend. We shall see. Hey, Venom, thank you. There's Venom Verby. Hey, there's Jake, the original Tribal Chief. Welcome, Jake. We go to the ring for a special announcement. With Justin Roberts, he's addressing the crowd, and they're in Phoenix tonight. Now, if you missed it, earlier today, one of the local publications in Arizona, might have been the Arizona, Arizona Republic, it might have been. They fed them the story that AEW is returning to Phoenix in a few months on pay-per-view for Double or Nothing. So Double or Nothing is coming to Phoenix. The date is, my goodness. The date is May 25th. I almost choked to death here. I almost choked to death on my drink. I almost died on this stream, and I just saw a learning tree. What a way to go, too. I get Chris Jericho on my screen talking about the learning tree, and then I choked to death. What a horrible way to go that would have been. Can you imagine I keel over here and that's one of the last things I see? How ridiculous that would have been. They'll put that on my tombstone. They'll put, what are they going to write on my tombstone? Tuxedo says, put the X up. We need the referee X for Solomonster. Would have died a legend, though? I don't know if legend is the word I would use for it. Yeah, you got to put the dreaded X up for me. I'm good now, though. I'm good. Went down the wrong way. And so I'm glad you can laugh at my near death experience here. That's very nice. For all the work I do for you, that's very nice. Thank you. Mike nailed it. Just on my tombstone. Thanks, guys. That's it. That's all you need. So anyway, May 25th, that's Memorial Day weekend, as it is every year. And Double or Nothing will be coming to the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona. All of the previous Double or Nothing shows, except for those two, I believe it was, that took place in Jacksonville during the pandemic with, you know, virtually no fans. All the other shows, including the very first one, I was there for that one. That was a lot of fun, were in Vegas. So this will be the first one, pandemic shows notwithstanding, that takes place outside of Vegas. And they won't be very far, you know. I mean, they're in Arizona. Arizona and Nevada are a lot closer than Arizona and New York, so they won't be that far. I actually think Atlantic City would have worked too, although I think they may have just had full gear in New Jersey, so maybe they didn't want to go back there so quickly. But I think one of these days they probably should consider doing a Double or Nothing in Atlantic City. It would still fit the theme. But I think it's a wise move. Here's the biggest reason why I think it's a wise move for them not to go back to Vegas. People are talking about the crowd. Oh, you know, the crowd was dead last year. Don't go back to Vegas. No, here's a good reason not to go back, because WrestleMania has two nights in April in Las Vegas. So it's going to be wrestling fever in that city with the biggest possible event the month before. Probably best to avoid Las Vegas this year. So I think that's a wise move. Now, up next was our brand new AEW Women's World Champion. Four times over, Timeless Toni Storm, who beat Mariah May in Australia. We did not hear from Mariah May tonight. We did not see Mariah May tonight. But Luther accompanied Toni Storm down to the ring before heading to the back and giving Storm the ring all to herself. Literally the spotlight. Literally had the spotlight all to herself. She said, "The whore you all adore, the slut you can't rebut, the tramp is now the champ." How can you not love this woman? Who the fuck does not like Timeless Toni Storm? And why? I need to know why. "The whore you all adore, the slut you can't rebut, the tramp is now the champ." Storm, she brought up the woman from hell who she beat for the title, calling Mariah May a sick bitch who gave Storm the fight of her life. And Toni said that she beat her with her small package. And as folks say, good things come in small packages. But Mariah should have worn protection, as Toni railed her with... as Toni railed her with the biggest package that there's ever been. She said Mariah has been banished and compromised to a permanent end. Holy shit, she used the infamous John Cena line. Mariah bin Laden has been permanently compromised. We can all rest easy. So she plugged her upcoming film, Queen of the Ring, which she is in. That's coming out on March 7th. And then she continued on with her promo, saying that she's here to defend her title against the best, whether that's Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, or Wendi Richter. And she said, whoever wants to go face-to-face, tit-to-tit, or lip-to-lip, she's not hard to find, as God is a woman and her name is Timeless. And she drops the mic and she gives a bow and a pose as they very slowly fade to black. Toni Storm is a treasure who must be protected. Absolutely a treasure that must be protected. Who steps up next is the question coming out of this. She mentioned Chris Statlander. She mentioned Willow Nightingale. I don't think that was a sign that those are going to be the, you know, people next in line, but she was just kind of running down some names. I still think the answer is Mariah May. We got a pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks. That's not enough time to build up a brand new challenger. I think you have Mariah May return to the show next week, lay a beat down on Toni Storm, or even just cut a, you know, kind of a mean promo on her and say that you didn't beat me, I beat myself. Because she beat her with a small package. It was hardly a decisive win at Grand Slam. And I think that's why they did that finish, frankly, the way that they did. Because they were not done yet. Well, now they're one win apiece. Mariah won in Wembley. Toni won in Brisbane. And now they're going to go to Revolution, all tied up. And they have the blow-off match at Revolution. And then they go their separate ways. Because as I said in my Grand Slam review, these two women have had a stranglehold on the world championship in this women's division now for like a year and a half. So it is time to move on and give other people some opportunities. You're not going to fucking do that in 2 weeks. Yeah, I'm going to get to it here in a second, but they booked a match for Revolution between Mercedes Moné and Momo Watanabe. Like, I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry, I don't. No offense to Momo Watanabe, but my God, she won a match on the pre-show at the Tokyo Dome at the beginning of the year that I had completely forgotten about, frankly, because there's been no mention of it recently. And all of a sudden, she's coming in to challenge Mercedes for her championship at Revolution. Okay. Great build. I don't want to see them do the same thing for the women's world title. Have a proper blow-off between them, maybe even a lights-out match. Frankly, I think the lights-out stipulation would be worthy of these two women. I know in the past they like to end the show with a lights out match. I don't see them ending, you know, this show with a lights out match between them, but that would be a fine stipulation. Last woman standing. I mean, you could do any number of stipulations, but as far as who's next in line, I think that's who it is, and I think that's how it should be. Winston says women's ladder match. Sure. Yeah, you could do that. You could do that, but do it at Revolution and then take your time as you build to whoever the next challenger is. I was looking before I went live. I took a look real quick at the women's roster as it's currently listed on the AEW roster page. There was no one name, honestly, that jumped out at me, you know, because the names that I'm thinking of, those are not the names I want to see Toni Storm defend against in her first or second title defense. Like when I think of someone like a Jamie Hayter, she's someone who I want to see built back up to, you know, some semblance of what she used to be, and you do that match in the summer, you know? So I'm not even jumping into a Jamie Hayter or a Megan Bain who only just debuted on TV. So I'm looking at some of the other names, and nobody really jumps out at me. You know, there's Athena. Very clear to me that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I don't know when she does wrap up with Mariah May, who that next person is going to be. But we should hold off on that until after Revolution. We got a video package for Gabe Kidd. Gabe Kidd from New Japan Pro Wrestling is coming to Collision this Saturday. And he's having a career year so far with that big match he had with Kenny Omega at the Tokyo Dome. Great match at the beginning of the year. He had a match with Yota Tsuji a few weeks ago that ended in a double knockout. That I did see that was also very good. But it's just very funny to me. You know, they put him in the graphic and they said, oh, Gabe Kidd is coming to Collision this weekend. And yeah, and I know it was a work to build up his match with Omega, but still, like, as he was promoting his match with Omega, which AEW never did, so it was all on him, honestly. And those promos he cut burying Tony Khan and burying this company, it was all on Gabe Kidd to really get people excited for that match. And all he talked about was like, he's just completely shit on AEW. And I remember specifically in one of the promos, I think my favorite part of the whole thing. Yeah, he was talking about how, like, should I be worried that they might not sign me, you know, to a contract? And he's like, why? So they can bring me into Dynamite for a few matches and then I could sit backstage and catering for like 24 weeks. I'm like, well, you know, he's not wrong. He kind of has a point. He's like, bring me in and sit me in catering for 24 weeks to do fuck all. Here he is, though. He's coming in. So you could see Gabe Kidd on Collision this weekend. Renee was backstage with Willow Nightingale. But Willow said she was given a minute of precious television time last week, only to be interrupted by Renee's husband and Marina Shafir. Right on cue, Marina Shafir busts into the shot and attacks her. And John Moxley walks into the shot, and he brings the cameraman out onto the stage with him, and Wheeler Yuta, Wheeler fucking Yuta, is with them as well. So Moxley takes the microphone to the ring, and he's all fired up. He sounded angry. I don't know why. He fucking won the match on Saturday, which was a bizarre finish for that match. But he looked angry. You would if you'd missed Grand Slam and you tuned into Dynamite tonight, you would think that he lost. You would think the Death Riders lost to Adam Copeland and Jay White on Saturday, but you would be wrong. But Moxley said that he's the champion of the world, which means this is his mic, this is his camera, these are my people, you're in my seats. No one comes into my house and challenges me like Adam Copeland did. Says Copeland isn't here. He's probably still face down in the dirt in Australia after Moxley nearly popped his head off with his bare hands. If Copeland comes to Revolution, Moxley will finish the job. So Switchblade Jay White's music hit, and he walked out on stage through the tunnel. Claudio Castagnoli has now joined the rest of the crew in the ring, but what Jay White does not see is creeping out through the tunnel behind him is Pac. So now he's surrounded, right? He's got the Death Riders all around him. Copeland's music hits, and he attacks Moxley from behind. Jay White drops Pac with a Blade Runner on the stage. Copeland lands a spear on Claudio. He goes outside, and he grabs Spike. His board with the nails in it. Brings it into the ring, and took a swing at Moxley. Couldn't connect. He chased Moxley into the crowd with Spike, and he had a microphone. And Copeland said that Moxley has no spine, so he's going to take his goon squad out one by one until it's man-to-man at Revolution, and he will kick Moxley's ass. This was certainly an angle. I don't know what else you want me to say about it. I mean, they're building up to a match I don't really care for. I just can't get into this. I don't have any emotional investment in this Death Rider story. I don't have any emotional investment or attachment to Copeland being the number one contender for this championship. I want them to move past this to whatever comes next. But that finish on Saturday makes you really wonder, are they going to do a title change at Revolution? How is Christian, if at all, going to factor into the finish of the match or the post-match? Would they have Copeland win and then have Christian cash in on him and win, which would kind of be a rehash of when Copeland won the TNT title and then, you know, dropped it 3 minutes later and Christian got it back. What are they going to do? Or are they just going to have him go in there and lose again? That would be fucking weird, right? He gets choked out in Australia, goes to Revolution and loses again. That doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what they're going to do. I'm a little worried. Not that John Moxley is going to lose. I mean, that'd be great. Copeland is not the right person to take that championship from him. So I don't know what they're going to do. But again, this angle, it was fine. It was what it was. But I'd be lying if I told you I really gave a shit about any of this, because I cannot invest in this. This does nothing for me. When I see Hangman and MJF at the beginning of the show, especially because they've been kept apart for so long, that means something to me. You know, I've been watching AEW since day one, so I remember what those early days and those early shows looked like and who the key players were and who the AEW originals were. And so that, to me, I can invest in that, and I have a connection to that. And I think it's going to be a great feud. They'll have some great matches. Yeah, Moxley and Copeland, they may go out there and tear it up, you know, and have a very good main event at Revolution. But at the end of the day, you know, you still have, it's Adam Copeland, you know, WWE's Adam Copeland in there challenging for the AEW World Championship to be the savior of this company, to rescue AEW from the Death Riders, who happen to be led by a former WWE star. But you know what, at this point, I don't even really look at Moxley as an ex-WWE guy so much as kind of the heart and soul of AEW, because he has been booked that way for so long. You know, he was always the guy Tony Khan would fall back on when shit went sideways. Someone got suspended. Someone got hurt. Put the belt on Mox. So he's been an AEW guy from day one, right? We know where he came from. But he was there in 2019 when this company first got off the ground with that first pay-per-view. So I consider him an AEW guy. Copeland, I don't. And I just think if you are, really are going to change the title, it really should go to somebody like that. Not like Copeland or Lashley or anybody like that. But I don't know what they're going to do. Just a very strange finish to that tag match on Saturday. Renee was backstage with Mercedes Moné, who said that Harley Cameron learned that there is a price to pay when you mess with Moné. We cut to Momo Watanabe, who is going to be challenging her, as we found out here, for her championship next, because she was there, by the way. I think she was she in the front row? I think she was there, right? She was there on Saturday in Australia. So that should have been a dead giveaway right there. But she won that International Women's Four-Way, which was on the pre-show at Wrestle. It was so important they had it on the pre-show at Wrestle Dynasty, which earned the winner the right to challenge for whatever championship in whatever promotion that she so chooses. And I had forgotten about it. Like, I watched the match. I thought the match was pretty good. And then there was nothing said about it. And I totally forgot about it. I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot. That's right. She did. She won that four-way. And so she cut a little promo here. You know, whatever. I mean, look, it's someone for Mercedes to beat, right? Someone to feed to her at the pay-per-view. There's no story to it. There's no sort of attachment to either of these people in this particular situation. Obviously, Mercedes is the heel. Momo is not a full-time AEW star. She's coming in from the outside. That's all well and good. I think the match can end up being very good. But again, I look ahead and say, who's going to be that person who beats Mercedes? Who are they setting up to be that person who beats Mercedes? I wouldn't mind a third match where Chris Statlander gets one more shot at it. And the comparison that I made actually on TNT last night was, if they do that story, it kind of reminds me, or it would remind me, of the Jey Uso and Gunther story from WrestleMania, right? That they're doing right now as we speak, going into WrestleMania. Jey Uso has wrestled Gunther three times. He's lost all three times. Yet he still comes out and says, I know I can beat this guy. I know I can be champion. I know I can beat him. So he won the Rumble, and now he's going to WrestleMania, and he's going to beat him. Statlander has now lost twice, right? Fair and square. Twice to Mercedes. And absolutely did not, you know, do anything to warrant getting an immediate third match. But if they build to it, she can say, I know I can beat her, right? You beat me the first two times. I know I can beat Mercedes. And maybe Statlander, in the end, gets the TBS title back. You know, or maybe they build up somebody else. Harley Cameron is a work in progress. That's a longer term story. I don't know that you need to keep that TBS title on Mercedes for more than a few more months. Harley Cameron, if she's going to get there, that's much later in the year. I don't know. I don't know who that person is. I can tell you who that person is not going to be. It is not going to be Momo Watanabe. I know that. That I can promise you. Chris Statlander, speaking of which, how about that? What a segue. Chris Statlander had a match on this show. And Chris Statlander went one-on-one with Megan Bain, the Megasis. Statlander lit her up in the corner with chops until Bain powered out. And Statlander wanted an electric chair. Bain slid out and hit a huge spear. That took us into a commercial break. Both women collide with clothesline attempts out of the break. There was a pump kick from Bane that led to her charging right into a lariat by Statlander. Axe kick from Statlander got a near fall. She went for a Wednesday night fever. And Bane slid out into a deadlift German suplex. They were slugging it out on the apron. Bane missed a home run shot. Statlander hit a back suplex right on the apron. Statlander tried to recover. Bane, who had rolled into the ring, she kind of rose up from the dead behind her and grabbed her for a German suplex back into the ring. So both women slug it out. They're on the ropes until Bayne takes the referee. And this allows Penelope Ford to run out and shove Statlander off the top rope. And Bayne then hit the F5, and she finished off Statlander and picked up the win. Let me stop there. When I saw these two women going at it last week, I got excited. And I said, oh, this could be good, right? I thought maybe they'll do it at Revolution. They did it tonight. And I thought they had a good match, right? There may be another one because we saw Penelope get involved. It may yet happen again at Revolution. So the match, I thought, it was good. It was a good match. But then we had the post-match. If they would have just ended it right there, like, that would have been fine. But then we had the post-match. And I'm still trying to, like, wrap my head around what happened here. Penelope Ford gets in the ring, and she is attacking Chris Statlander. It's a two-on-one attack, right? Because Megan's there as well, so it's basically two-on-one. And Thunder Rosa comes out. Thunder Rosa comes out wielding a steel chair. Now, even though there are two women in the ring, right? I mean, Statlander is down. So there's two women in the ring. She's outnumbered. She's got a chair. The chair is the equalizer. So you would expect that as she is hitting the ring, and there was not a long aisleway here. It's a small venue. They actually had like an elevated ramp to the ring. And then boom, you had your two entrance tunnels. So it's not like Rosa had a long way to run. But if you're the heels, right, you see this, you head for higher ground, right? This woman, she's a crazy woman. She's got a chair. Let's get the hell out of here. Well, they stayed in the ring. So Thunder Rosa gets into the ring. She's got a chair. You have now put Thunder, by not leaving the ring or having referees come out to get between them, you have put Thunder Rosa, the babyface now, in this horrible position. Because she either has to swing the chair, which obviously they don't want her to do. She's not supposed to. Or what ended up happening is she stands there and looks like a fucking idiot. She gets in the ring. She has the chair. The heels are just standing there. They're like, go ahead. Go ahead. Do something about it. And Rosa, she hauls back like she's going to hit Penelope with it and then brings the chair and then stops. And I'm like, what is going on here? Then Penelope Ford, she grabs the chair to try to wrestle it away from her. So like they're jockeying now for the chair, which Rosa still has possession of. The heels, by the way, they're not even selling fear or nothing. They have smiles on their faces. It's like they're laughing. And Thunder Rosa has to stand there and look like a fucking idiot. And then the heels just leave. I have no idea what happened here. This was horrendous. I mean, seriously, this looked like something that you would see like on like some low rent, you know, indie or something with, you know, five people there. People in their backyard, like friends just putting on a show. Like, I don't know what happened here. I really don't. Obviously, there was a breakdown in communication. There was a miscommunication somewhere. I would love to know where that break in the chain came from. But if you're in that situation, just leave. Just leave the ring. Why did they stay? Everybody looked bad here. Like every single person, Thunder Rosa, most of all, everybody looked bad here. I came away from this segment like, don't ever put a chair in Thunder Rosa's hands again. Don't do it. It made her look so, and maybe it was her fault. Maybe it was somebody else's fault, but whoever's fault it was, it made her look so bad. So it's too bad because that was the real story coming out of this when I thought these two had, you know, a pretty good match, but my God. Like this looked like amateur hour here. So I don't know where the miscommunication was, but yeah, this was no good. This was no good. Then we had Ricochet. He was out next. Imagine going from this to Ricochet, because now we have Ricochet out here. And he is wearing the embassy robe that he stole from Prince Nana after he beat Swerve a couple of weeks ago. So he walks out to the ring for a promo. And he healed on the Phoenix crowd, said that he's got a helicopter outside waiting to lift him out of here as soon as he's finished, because like Kevin Durant, he's trying to get out of this boring-ass town as quickly as possible. Since these people are acting like ungrateful animals, he said, because they were booing him. Not like, you know, people boo New Day or Dominic, but they were booing him. So he said, I'm going to speak directly to the people at home. And he looked right into the camera. Said, we need to understand that all of these people and this booing, it doesn't matter. Because when you boo a winner, you boo into a void of nothingness. That like the Jericho vortex? Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. When it comes to relationships, you always hear about red flags, right? Here's one red flag to avoid. Here's another red flag to avoid. But what if we focus more on looking for green flags when it comes to your friends and your partners? If you're not sure what they look like, therapy can help you identify those green flags, even actively practice them in your relationships. Maybe it's sharing. Maybe it's having more of a sense of humor. It could be any number of things. Whether you're dating, you're married, you're building a friendship with someone, or just working on yourself, it's time to form relationships that love you back. The benefits that therapy can carry are endless. Whatever experiences you've had, you just know that there are other people out there that have gone through the same thing or something similar. So you're not alone. But therapy can help teach you things like positive coping skills and how to set boundaries in your life. It can help you become the best possible version of yourself. It's what we all want, but a lot of us struggle with that every single day. There's always some kind of problem that we're dealing with, whether it's physical, emotional, or otherwise. But you need to first take that step and admit that there's something wrong and that you need help. If you're thinking about jumping in the pool, I can tell you that BetterHelp is completely online, making therapy affordable and convenient, and you'll be joining the more than 5 million people worldwide being served by BetterHelp right now. You'll also have access to a network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties, and you can easily switch therapists at any time at no extra cost. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/Solomonster. So you boo into a void of nothingness, he said, and Ricochet is a winner. As he proved when he pinned Swerve Strickland to the match or in their match 2 weeks ago. But he's been proving it really since day one, he says, in AEW, because Ricochet has whooped Swerve's ass. He's whooped Ospreay's ass. Actually, he didn't say Darby Allin's ass. He said Darby Allin ass and Commander ass. So, I mean, two things I really didn't need to be thinking about. I don't spend every waking hour of my day thinking about Darby Allin ass or Commander ass, but maybe he does. I don't know. So he says, winners always have something to show for it. And he showed off his robe. But he's not content with just wearing this. He wants to wear gold. Because he can go out and buy a chain. Because Ricochet will not be just another name on the roster. He will be the main name on this roster. So that's where his sights are set for 2025. He wants to be a champion in AEW. He goes, no. Actually, he goes, I will be a champion in AEW. Because he is too damn good looking not to be, he says. Thank God we had Swerve's music interrupted. Because this was now, at this point in the promo, it's like, all right, I'm giving him the hook. I'm like, all right, wrap this up here. So we hear Swerve's music. Out comes Prince Nana, no Swerve. And he walks to the ring alone. He goes, he knows what Ricochet is thinking, but this is not that. Okay, this is not a trap. This is not an ambush. And he goes, I asked Swerve to stay home. So Swerve is not here tonight. Because one thing I know is that Ricochet is wearing something that doesn't belong to him. 3 decades, Prince Nana has been in this business, closing major deals, making champions, making history, and that robe has a lot to do with it. That robe right there represents pride. It says it represents integrity. That robe represents those that he has managed and those that we have lost. Shout out to Jimmy Rave. But anyone who's wearing it has honor and is destined for greatness, and he never gave Ricochet that opportunity. So he asked Ricochet to give the robe back. Ricochet did not, in fact, give the robe back. He told Nana, why don't you take it? And Nana looked all nervous. He wasn't going to make a move. And Ricochet told him, you're not getting the robe back. and off he went. Ricochet, you know what Ricochet needs? And there's been a lot of talk about her, but I actually think now is the perfect time to bring her in. He needs Samantha. I think, and she, you know, she wants to be part of the show and she wants to perform and maybe she could be a heel. Can she be a heel? I don't know. Can she cut a promo, like a mean promo? I don't know. But I think that if they brought in Samantha Irvin to be paired off with Ricochet, they could get a tremendous amount of heat. And I think as a pair on screen, I think that could work. Because Ricochet just going out and doing these promos, there were people, like I saw in the chat, like shitting all over, like, oh my God, this promo was the worst thing in the world. It wasn't. It wasn't great, but I didn't think it was as bad as some people said that it was. But I do think that that could be the missing ingredient to really kind of put him over the top as far as getting him that level of hate that you would want him to get on this show. Because then he could just gloat and brag of, oh, look what I have, you know what I mean? And she obviously has talked about wanting to be more than just a ring announcer, you know? You haven't seen the last of me in wrestling, and I wanted to be a manager, and I wanted to do this and contribute in this way. Well, you know what? What do you have to lose? Give her the chance. Maybe you end up striking gold, heel gold, with these two. Maybe they'll get all kinds of heat. I don't know. But that's what I was thinking when this was over. She should be out there doing at least some of the talking for him instead of him being out there for 10 minutes cutting a promo by himself. If this was half the length, then I think that would have been a lot better. But it just got to a point where it's like when I heard the music and Nana came out, I go like, oh, thank God. Thank God. It was time. It was time. They closed the show with Orange Cassidy against Roderick Strong in a match that they said was part of the International Championship Series, with the winner to challenge Konosuke Takeshita on Dynamite next week for the championship, and the winner of that would then defend against Kenny Omega at Revolution. Right? Completely ass backwards here. It's like Omega is the champion. Omega is the final boss. Takeshita is just trying to punch his ticket to Revolution. This fucking guy, he's just trying to get on the card. Like, what? But that's how it's all set up. It's all very weird. Both Cassidy and Roddy are former international champions, which is why I assume we saw that. I have to assume that's the only reason why we got them in this match. Because Orange Cassidy, prior to tonight, had not wrestled since New Year's Day. And he lost. He wrestled Hangman and lost on New Year's Day. He hasn't been seen since. All of a sudden, he's challenging potentially for the international title. Him and Roddy are former champions. Okay, you guys go out there. And they gave them the main event. Eh. Not a main event. They brought Jim Ross, though, in to call it, since it was the main event. I don't know why this match got the JR treatment, but they got the JR treatment. No more Dark Cassidy, by the way. He wasn't out there in black jeans. He was rocking the old school denim after his 6-week vacation. And they had a solid wrestling match. You know, if you can get past the fact that they're basically fighting to find out who's going to lose to Takeshita next week. Talk about predictable. So if you can get past that, you know, they had a good little match here. Cassidy wanted his spinning DDT. Strong avoided it. Cassidy almost hit a Stun Dog Millionaire, but Roddy dodged it. Cassidy hit on the second try. He hit the DDT he was looking for. And then he hit Beach Break, got a near fall out of that. Signaled for the Orange Punch, but that little delay when he was signaling for it allowed Roddy to hit a charging knee, multiple backbreakers. Capped it off with the end of Heartache. Was not enough, though, to pick up the win. Yes, Hurricane says a Rampage main event. Well, we can't have those anymore. But yes, you are correct. So there was a Stronghold attempt by Roddy, countered into a roll-up for two. Strong was up first to hit another backbreaker into a clover leaf. Cassidy got the ropes. Cassidy ran into a pop-up gutbuster followed by a sick kick, and Roddy wanted another end of Heartache. Cassidy countered into a Stun Dog Millionaire and an Orange Punch to get the win. Roddy was not very happy when this was over. He was visibly upset. He was consoled by Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, who were out there with him. So off they went. And Tony Schiavone gets in the ring. And I had no idea he was even there tonight. I said, oh, okay. We had Ian on commentary. I thought Tony was still in Australia or something. He was hanging out with the koala bears. I didn't fucking know the guy was even there. So he said that if Cassidy wins next week, he has the chance to go for the three-peat and become the greatest international champion in the history of this company. So Don Callis's music hits, and he walks out with Kinosuke Takeshita and Mark Davis. Callis said Cassidy is nothing more than a redheaded hippie, a loudmouth punk, and he ordered Davis and Takeshita to attack. So they did. Then they held Cassidy so that Callis could get some licks in himself until Kenny Omega's music hits. And out he comes. He bolts to the ring. He was in control briefly until Davis sank in a sleeper. Takeshita hit some boots to the ribs and then a home run forearm. Cassidy tried to make the save. Takeshita wanted the raging fire, but Cassidy countered into a stun dog millionaire. Omega hit a V-trigger. And Cassidy dropped him with an orange punch. So Omega and Cassidy, they stand tall in the end. And the announcers talk about how if Orange Cassidy is successful next week, which he won't be, but if he is, then it would be Cassidy and Omega for the international title at Revolution, as if. Wasn't that Alicia Silverstone's favorite line from Clueless? As if. As if. As if we're going to get that.
As if. As if.
It's not going to happen. So Omega held up the title, and Cassidy stared it down, and that is how they went off the air tonight. Overall, I'll say it again. They peaked with the opening segment. After that, it was hit or miss. There were some things I liked. There were a bunch of things that I thought were completely ridiculous. But solid overall. First hour was definitely the more superior of the two, I would say. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. See what you thought of Dynamite tonight. Post Grand Slam, 57% thumbs up, 43% thumbs down. So we're still in the positive range, because we went through a spell there for a while where Dynamite was, it was not looking good. But it's been pretty consistently thumbs up the last two or three weeks. But this is the weakest of the thumbs up that we've seen so far, which honestly, it makes sense. That does make sense to me. All right, let's take a look at your super chats here. One of my favorite parts. Let's get into it here. Hope you guys have had a good Wednesday as we cap it off here. 5 minutes from midnight here on the East Coast. We are currently at 300 likes, which is not good. So if we're going to do Be the Booker tonight, you're going to have to try harder than that. So get those likes up. Or we may have to table that for Friday. So go ahead and do that. All right, let's start here with our boy, Brother Fluff Salisbury. Came in earlier with a $10 super chat. So thank you, Solo, for your kind words during the most surreal weekend of my life. When I got to my dad's place today, my parents' wedding rings were laid out with a note that said, "For the wedding." Wow. Well, having read the email you sent me, that's pretty powerful stuff. And again, my condolences to you. Luff lost his dad a few days ago, but popped the question to his partner. All of this happened right around the same time. So, it's kind of a mix of emotions right now for him, but I'm thinking about you, brother. Thank you for the support. And that's tough. Hey, Powerblind, thank you for the 24 months of channel membership. Been a member for 2 years, but been a fan since TV Tracks. That's going back. That's going back over a decade. That's like 12 or 13 years. It's a long time. Hulkling 93. Although the rule change was likely made to protect Hobbs and Bill, if you think about it, a street fight should be knockout or submission. Well, yes, they said knockout, but, you know, again, it's one of those things where he was stuck in the barbed wire. She started the 10 count. Knockout, when I hear knockout, knockout implies, like, the guy gets literally knocked out and the ref just calls for the stoppage. I guess it's a matter of perspective. You could say, well, in a last man standing match, that's technically a knockout if you can't, you know, get up by the 10 count. I see that as a last man standing stipulation. To me, that's like a different thing altogether. Maybe they saw it a different way. I just thought it was a little odd. Ed Swoggle. I'm not too upset I missed this show in person, but I guess I'm not saving money after all now with Double or Nothing in May and on sale this week. Yeah, man, you get to go to Double or Nothing. They're going to be coming to town. Although Glendale, right? Technically Glendale, not Phoenix. They were in Phoenix tonight. Love this. Love this song. Oz and Glorious. Thunder Rosa coming out smiling with the chair, looking and acting completely lost was wild. Total Walter White. I don't know about that. She definitely she did herself no favors coming out like that. I don't know. I don't know what happened there. I don't know what the plan was. I have no idea. That was so bad. That was so bad. Oz says, Gabe Kidd is everything Tony Khan wishes Garcia was. Gabe Kidd is awesome. Gabe Kidd is a superstar in the making. Says, 400 likes. And Elon will start coughing in 3 days. Where are we? Where are we now on the likes? Let's take a look and see. Yeah, we're getting up there, but it's slow. Oz says, Joe Hendry blowing Logan Paul on X equals big fail. Well, he's trying to ingratiate himself with all the WWE folks. He'll be working there at some point. Tuxedo T Servo with the 12. As a member of the legally blind community, I'd like to state for the record that we make no claim on Rick Knox. His issues are beyond visual field. So even the legally blind are backing away from Rick Knox. They want nothing to do with him. Base Beer, as they censored his name like it's Kill Bill. Talking about Jericho. Michael Darcy, I think we should take a moment and thank Chris Jericho for everyone singing Adam Copeland's theme in Australia. Jericho truly is a trendsetter. Yes, thank you, Chris Jericho. Because apparently that all started with him. Singing one's theme song is a Chris Jericho staple. Thank you, Chris. Verum Verbi. If Brie Mode joined Y2J, she would be the Learning Brie. She would be Tree Mode. Groovy Goose. Thought the Mania sign was a UFO at first. No, it's not a UFO. From afar, maybe. Because the way I cut it out, I guess maybe you could see it that way. Eminem, did someone say Brie Mode? Here you go. Now that Toni Storm regained the women's title, is it time to turn Jamie Hayter back to a heel and let them wrestle at All In? Also, there's a rumor that Brie will be back in WWE. It's not a rumor. I mean, Nikki has openly talked about wanting her back in WWE. She says she's trying to get her sister back with her. I don't even think you need to turn Jamie Hayter heel. You could. I don't think you even have to bother, like, heel, babyface. Doesn't matter. Let the fans choose. Who they're hotter for in that case. That would be a great match to book for that Texas show at All In. And it would give them time in between now and then to really build Hayter back up to that level where she should be contending for a world title. I do miss the old Jamie Hayter, though. I'm not going to lie. This version of Jamie Hayter is just so divorced from what I remember from Jamie before she got hurt. I wish we could get that Jamie back. I hope we can. I hope so. Groovy Goose, thanks for the stream, Solomonster. It's nice knowing we have a rational and reliable place for wrestling news. Watch out for choking hazards. I'm going to try. But hey, you know, sometimes it goes down the wrong pipe. Base Bearist, the RTC would have had a great feud with Timeless Toni Storm. Oh, they would have had a blast with her. Oz and Glorious, RJ City is a treasure for quarterbacking Tony's story. Yep, he has been a big part of the creative process when it comes to that character. To what extent, I don't know. I'm sure it's a collaboration with Tony and him, the other Tony. But Toni Storm deserves a lot of credit for what she has been able to create with that character. It is something special. Near. Hey, Solo, why Michael Jackson doesn't drink coffee? Because he likes tee-hee. Thank you, Near. Be calm, see clearly. What advice can you give me to separate WWE from the perv Vince? Because when I try to watch it, all I could think of is the perverted stuff. I mean, there's not much advice I can give you. I don't think about him at all. I mean, you just got to focus on what you see on TV and try not to think about him when you're watching the actual shows. And if not, maybe you just can't watch the actual shows anymore. I don't have any real good advice for you, brother. He's the last thing I think of when I watch these shows now. I don't want to think about him. You know, when there's news, I talk about him, but I have completely separated him out from what I see. I mean, I've separated him out a long time ago, but I don't think about him at all. BCOM says, that was a question for everybody to see how they separate WWE from the perverted crap Vince was doing and will get away with no justice. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm able to just not think about him and separate that disgusting shit from what I see on the actual television shows. It's the same way, like, if there was... I'll use Benoit. I mean, I'm not comparing the two totally different situations, obviously, but he did something horrendous, and there are people who just cannot watch a Chris Benoit match. They just can't, because it makes them think about what happened there, and they just... It just brings you down. It's such a horrible, horrendous thing. Nobody likes to be reminded of it. Some people are just not able to separate the two, and I understand that. I don't go out of my way to watch any Chris Benoit matches. But if I happen to be watching a pay-per-view or an old episode of Nitro and he's on there, I don't turn it off, you know? I'm like, oh, okay, there he is. And then I just go on with my day, you know? But I can understand, you know, some people, it just puts them in a bad headspace and they just don't want to even see the guy's face because it makes them think about the horrible thing that happened. Chris Manson, do you like musicals? My favorites are Little Shop of Horrors and Rocky Horror Picture Show. Little Shop of Horrors was good. Generally speaking, no. I'm not a musical guy. Alex, what was your favorite match from the inaugural All In from 2018? Are there any subsequent AEW pay-per-views that come close or pass this one? Oh, AEW. I mean, AEW has had tons of shows that have blown that out of the water. You know, I mean, that first All In was special because it was just, it was a special attraction. You know, they went out there and did something that had never been done before. Let me take a look at the card here, because I always think of Cody and Nick Aldis. I don't know if that was the best match I enjoyed, though. Let me see here. Remind myself. Was it? But didn't they have the Joey Ryan stuff with, like, the fucking, like, the dicks or whatever? They had that nonsense on there, too. Let me see here. Ah, that's right. We had Kenny and Penta. That was awesome, actually. Kenny and Penta had a great match. No, I think I'm going to stick with Cody and Aldis, though. I think that was probably my favorite match on the show. Base Bear is, remember the MJF Jericho musical? So I get a question from Chris, do I like musicals? And then I get a question from Base Bear, it's completely unrelated, do I remember the MJF Jericho musical? Yes, I remember it. I think they did a whole New York Times article about it. And the Juliet, thoughts on the Ricky Saints name? Yes, Ricky Starks is now Ricky Saints. And as he explained, he's a New Orleans guy. Obviously, has a deep connection to his hometown roots. The name is fine. I don't think it's a bad name. I don't really have an issue with the name. My whole thing is I don't understand the logic and why it had to be changed. And I don't think it was his choice. Like, you could be Ricky Starks, and he's like, actually, no, you know what? I want to be Ricky Saints. That's not the impression I got is that either he was told they couldn't come to some sort of legal agreement. It's like, okay, you've got to change your name now. And that's what he came up with. And I would just love to know why all these other people that have come in under their names from AEW were able to stick with those names in NXT or even in WWE on the main roster, but not him. I would imagine it just had to be a case where he wouldn't sign over the rights to it. It's the only thing I could think of. I just don't understand the logic behind why him and not anybody else. That being said, the new name, everybody's going to get used to it within a few weeks. Everybody will be calling him Ricky Saints, and nobody's going to be thinking about this anymore. So it really isn't that big of a deal. Of all the horrendous names that they could have given him, I think we're very fortunate that he didn't get saddled with one of those names, because it could have been a lot worse. So, I mean, Ricky Saints, if that's what it is, then that's fine. He is where he needs to be, though. That's the most important thing. He is where he needs to be. Chris Manson, Denise Huxtable is better than any other sitcom girl. Well, you're wrong, but okay. That's certainly your opinion. All right, well, you guys, you waited an awfully long time, but we did ultimately hit the goal, and so it's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
I didn't think it was going to happen. I did not think it was going to happen. Did I not import the... No, I did. I thought for a second I forgot to import the new mic input in here. I was like, can they hear me? I hope I'm still not working off the old input. And then I saw it. So we're good. Be the booker. Here we go. Be kind of funny. We weren't even going to do this if we end up just sweeping it. clean sweep tonight. How great would that be? Well, I had to go ahead and shoot my mouth off. We have the Stooges, Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe, with the Briscoe Brothers Body Shop phone number on his shirt. I have a great video up, by the way, a clip from the Sound Off this weekend. It's up on the channel now regarding Briscoe. I think you might find it pretty cool. So you could check that out. But yeah, this is, this is not going in the right direction here. The Briscoe Brothers, not the Briscoe Brothers, the team of Briscoe and Patterson. Well, so much for that. I had to go and shoot my mouth off. Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe against Men on a Mission. How close are we to 500 likes? Maybe we can get that second round, huh? 417? Yeah, okay, that's not going to happen. Well, there won't be any clean sweep tonight. I'm sorry, guys. I need to come up with a new sound effect for that, like a super buzz. Like, I feel like a regular buzz is just not enough. I may have to get a buzz for some of these Be the Booker installments. All right, women's Be the Booker, Mayu Iwatani. Legendary Mayu Iwatani is with us. And it will be Mayu Iwatani taking on Medusa, the former Alundra Blaze. In her prime against Mayu Iwatani, you're going to get yourself a hell of a women's match. That's what you're going to get. Hell yeah. And we got the main event. We have to break the logjam here. We have a tie. Not a bad start. Chad Gable, who's currently off mastering the dark arts somewhere. Chad Gable is in the main event, a place where Triple H is too afraid to put him. Let us find out who his opponent is going to be. Chad Gable against Johnny Gargano, which I think has the potential to be a very good match. But we're booking main events here. And I'm sorry to say, that don't work for me, brother. Kills me to do it. Kills me to do it. But I can't sit here and shit on Orange Cassidy against Roderick Strong in the main event spot and then give a bell to Johnny Gargano against Chad Gable in my main event. Can't do it. I'd be a hypocrite if I did that. All right, come on back on Friday night. And I will be here live for the SmackDown post show. Hopefully Maze will be with us as well. Maze the Great says, with how many people watch these shows, there's no way the likes should be less than 500. Oh, setting that as the goal? I don't know, man. People are lazy. We'll do Be the Booker once a week if we're lucky, if we do that. I may have to, though. I may have to up the goal. Light a fire under people, you know? We may have to. Maybe 450. Maybe 450 is the sweet spot there, right in between 400 and 500. What do you think about that? Chew on that for a while, and then we'll see you on Friday night. Until then, take care, guys.